Welcome again, everybody, to Fresh Coast Jazz Backstage. And we're excited about chatting with our guest today. While he certainly is not new to the game, he really is one of the emerging stars of the contemporary jazz genre, smooth jazz genre these days. He's been making music for about 3 decades now. He spent about 10 or 11 years touring the world and recording as a member of Brian Culbertson's band, and has worked with just about everybody who's anybody in the contemporary and smooth jazz world. In 2018, he stepped out front, and as of late, he's all over the touring and festival scene, bringing his music to the masses. In fact, we are excited to have him be one of our featured artists at the 7th annual Fresh Coast Jazz Festival. He has multiple Billboard Top 10 songs to his credit, and the future is nothing but bright for this saxophonist, vocalist, songwriter, arranger, and producer. Please welcome to the show, Mr. Marquell Jordan.
Hey, what's
What's
going on?
happening, man?
How you doing, Carl? Good to see you, brother.
Oh, man, I'm doing well. It's great to have you here, man. It's great to have you here. And man, so things really are going well for you, man. Like, I see you doing a lot of the big festivals, doing these cruises. I know you have built a significant following in your adopted hometown of Chicago as well. So how are you feeling about the arc of your career these days, man?
I think it's been really good in a variety of ways. It feels like a marathon and not a sprint, obviously. But I think most artists probably feel this way when you're in the midst of it, when you're in the trenches and you're just dealing with the thing that's right in front of you. It looks like a grind. It looks like you're not making progress. But when you get a chance to speak to fans or people that have been following your career, or you get a chance to like look at it from a bird's eye view and you get to see the distance that you've traveled, it's just like, this is good. Things are great. There's good momentum happening. I'm really starting to seriously work on this new record. So that's always a daunting task. It seems like it gets more challenging every time you do it, but you have more knowledge. So I mean, to try to answer it a little more succinctly, I feel great about it, but I'm also challenged by it as well.
And I think, with growth, there's always a little bit of challenge, right?
Absolutely.
And it's just, going to those different levels, it just requires a little bit more. So we have no doubt, though, that you're going to handle it just well. So you just dropped a little bird, and you got some new music coming up soon, huh?
Well, I'm in the very embryonic stages, but I go through these phases of thinking about a record and then letting it kind of swirl in my head, but then really starting to get to work with it. So I'm at the point now, it's like, all right, dude, let's stop thinking, let's start working. So I'm excited about it, and my last record was really really a turning point for my career. I think it was the best record that I've done. I've done 3 albums so far. So the self-imposed pressure that I feel on it is pretty intense. I know that people are just waiting for new music. They are not putting that kind of pressure on it. But for me, I'm putting that kind of pressure on it. So I want to keep, upping the ante, so to speak.
So is that the pressure that you're feeling though? Is the pressure to make it better than the last, or is it the pressure to find the creative spark, or is it a little bit of all of that, or?
It's all of that. In addition, I think it's the challenge to try to present something meaningful during this time that we're living through, which is
Oh
some
man.
very challenging stuff,
Yes.
obviously. And also just to feel like there's a progression, like that you see, I think you can look at any artist's career and you can look at the records that they've done, and hopefully you can see, like, there's stairs, like the first album is here and then the next one is here, and then, like, so I want that to keep going. And the climate of radio and streaming and all of those things, it's crazy how much it's changed in even the amount of time since my last record. It seems like the industry just changes daily, and trying to figure out a way to to navigate the business and still manifest what you want to manifest is I think that's the biggest challenge.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting point that you bring up because I don't, you know, I think one of the things that has, you know, really been remarkable for me is to learn just how much now being a musician, an accomplished musician, really isn't enough. You got to be a business per you got to be a business person too, and really be
Yes.
looking out for all of your interests.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's if you got into it, and I mean, I guess this is something that any aspiring artist should know. If you're getting into it, you know, it's not just about ability anymore. It's about
Yeah.
being able to build and cultivate a fan base and be able to market and promote. If you're an independent artist like I am, it's distributing your music, getting it placed on radio, all the things that, I will say, I think probably the younger artists or the people that are up and coming now, this is the industry that they inherited. So I think they know, and they're definitely more business savvy than someone like myself, who's, obviously a little bit older, and then coming in having to figure that learning curve out, because we fell in love with music. I definitely can speak for myself. I fell in love with music during the golden era, when it just seemed like, this guy didn't worry about music, he or mu the business of music. He was just a great saxophonist or a great singer, and all the machine put it together for him, and all that he or she had to get out and do was perform, and then everything else is taken care of. But those days are long, long gone.
They most certainly are. They most certainly are. So I came to know your music and know you as a contemporary jazz artist, but you know, you're a music with a lot, a musician with a lot of different layers and a lot of different, you know, forms of musical expression. So how do you describe yourself as a musician and the music that you create?
Wow, I think that changes daily, but with everything that's going on, and but if I were to make it be a succinct title and what I thought about or a slogan, I would say my style musically is like Grover Washington meets Maxwell.
I love that.
Those are people who are actually obviously heroes of mine, and kind of the way that I've wanted to present myself musically. I love jazz music. I grew up listening to traditional jazz music. I also grew up listening to, R&B and soul, and all of the different styles of music. So all of that stuff influences the music that I play and that I present and that I try to put out.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Is so when you're performing, like, and you're d preparing yourself, like you perform a lot. And so I know you perform under, like you perform as yourself, you perform in support of other artists, you perform with your band, right? How do you go about, you know, determining the vibe for each performance? How do you go about determining, hey, this is what I want to put out on stage today.
Oh man, that is a great question. And it's one that haunts me on my shows all the time. I wait to the last minute to put set lists together all the time, whether it's a local gig or whether I'm traveling. But I really want to present what I really try to do, especially on my shows, is tell a story. Kind of start off with a really strong statement, something kind of an up-tempo song or something that people may recognize if it's a local gig, and I do more covers and local gigs, obviously. But start off with something that will hook people in, and then we kind of ease into the rest of the set. Some mid-tempo songs, some things that to just make you tap your feet and feel good, and then go to something that is a little more slow tempo, a ballad, and just kind of take people on an arc, like a journey, and that's really the way that I try to approach every show, where I'm the band leader or it's my show. If I'm performing for another artist, I think the most important thing I could do is respect their music and be absolutely prepared to play any and everything that may come up. And that's what I try to do, and I really try to be, respectful to the style of the music, respectful to how much I should play, how much I should support this artist. And I'm really always thinking about that. When it's my time to do my thing, I do it. But as a supporting musician for an artist, that's the most important thing, is to support, and to take their music as seriously as you take your own.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So you are born in LA, right?
Yes.
And but you've been living in Chicago for how long now?
Oh man, 31 years now. It's been a long
31
time.
years. So you're a Chicagoan through and through.
Yeah, at this point. Yep.
So tell me, I used to live in Chicago. I love Chicago. Even though I'm in Milwaukee now, we have this rivalry, us Wisconsinites and Illinoisans, right? My wife and I are both people with strong, strong Chicago ties. City I love. And I'm curious for you how that city has, and the people of that city have impacted you and your career.
Oh man, it's been everything, really. I mean, I wear Los Angeles on my sleeve. I'm one of the few people who actually was born there. There's so many transplants in that city. And I didn't realize that growing up. I always thought, when you listen to Motown and Stevie and Ray Parker Jr. and all those people, and you just think, oh man, these are California people. No, they're from the Midwest. So, I lived in because my father's job, we moved to the Midwest in like the mid-80s. So I lived in Kansas City, Kansas, went to high school and college there. And then I moved to Chicago after college. And what Chicago did for me that LA couldn't have, that New York couldn't have, it allowed me to grow. I think if I'd have moved to Los Angeles right after college, there was so much I didn't know about the industry. There was so much I didn't know about being a musician, being a performing artist, that I would have either gotten chewed up and spit out, or I just wouldn't have had, I think I would have had a more challenging, frustrating time getting going. What Chicago did for me was it just allowed me to grow, and kind of grow at the pace that was necessary, not at a fast pace, but at a pace where I could learn how to perform. I didn't sing lead or front a band, quote unquote, until I moved to Chicago. I knew I could sing, but I never really took it seriously. But I had stages and venues where, even if we weren't completely the band or myself, if we weren't completely where we needed to be as musicians, the crowd was still with us. They still encouraged us to do what we were doing. And I don't think you get that kind of encouragement in a city like New York or a city like Los Angeles. So Chicago just really nurtured me and helped me grow as a performer, as a musician, as an artist, as a writer, all of those things. And it allowed me to come into myself at a pace that was comfortable for me, but still be able to make a living, which is crucial.
Absolutely, it is. Absolutely. And I love your take on Chicago, because I'm thinking about my experience there, and it was similar in that I think Chicago is a city where, people are interested in knowing what you got to bring to the table. And if they think you got something, like you said, they're going to work with you and they're going to give you an opportunity to show what you got.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that is fantastic. That's fantastic. So I've known you for several years now, and one of the things I've always respected about you and liked about you is just how every time I encounter you, no matter what the situation is, you have been a consistently good and humble brother.
Thank you, man.
And even as your career is, you're playing with all these people and you're seeing this wonderful stuff happen in your career, you still manage to maintain that positivity and that demeanor. How do you do that and do that so consistently over such a period of time?
Man, first of all, let me say thank you for that. I'm humbled by that myself. I just realized that because of the talent that I was blessed with and the opportunities that I've been given and have been blessed with, when I think about the grand scheme of where I am versus where I should be, whatever that means, I just feel like I haven't done it enough, you know, and that's enough to keep me humble. You know, I know what my shortcomings are, and I know the things that I need to work on. So that's the kind of the stuff that I worry about more. I don't necessarily excuse me, I don't necessarily celebrate the wins as much as I lament the defeats. So, you know, I think that definitely keeps me humble. I'm still searching. Clearly not where I want to be as a musician yet. And you know, there's still a lot of work to do. So there's really no time for me to be anything other than humble and still trying to work and still trying to, you know, respect the art, respect the people that I come across, and respect the situations that I'm blessed to be in.
That's fantastic. Well, let's start out listening to some of your music here with one of the songs that you did with Brian Culbertson, who you worked with for a long time. And this song is the song titled Sistus.
All right.
You can clap your hands wherever you are.
hit some buttons.
Yeah, man, I hit the wrong button.
Marquel's up at the soundboard doing things. I don't know what you're doing.
I was trying to do the you know, the infinity thing with that thing, and then I hit the wrong button. Oh, oh yeah. Oh,
no. Oh, hey, well. Hey, Quell.
Stay with
me. Oh!
Hey, man.
Hey, man.
It was fun. And it never lasted.
Well, there was Sistas.
Yes.
You heard it.
All right, everybody. That was our guest today, Marquel Jordan, along with Brian Culberson and his song, Sistas. So you and Brian clearly in that video have a kinship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that comes across, and that seems like, you know, you guys really enjoy collaborating with one another. Mm-hmm. And I've seen you collaborate with other artists too. And like, how do you go about that? Like, all artists are different, and you know, and they require different things. So how, like, I remember seeing you playing with Rick Braun once, and, yes. And you and Rick just seemed like y'all had a cool thing going on, just like you have a cool thing going on with Brian. How do you make that happen with these different artists that you work with?
First, let me say this too. I should also acknowledge the original writer of Sistas and the co-producer, Chris Big Dog Davis.
Which, oh, yes.
He initially brought the song to me, and then it okay. ended up being a triple collaboration between myself, Brian, and him. So super okay. shout out to Big Dog.
But absolutely.
But to answer your question, I don't know. I think I've always been a good team player.
Uh-huh.
I think if I played baseball, I'd probably be a utility player.
Okay. you
know,
yeah.
Probably wouldn't hit the home runs like that. But, you know, if you needed somebody to really hold down a position.
Yeah.
I could do that. And I just think that kind of fit my personality. And performing with Brian was a blessing. It was great. We do have great chemistry. And it seems like no matter when we're performing together and how long of a distance it's been between the last time we performed together, we just pick up right where we left off. It's just always been that way. And Rick was somebody I started working with. I think it was on the third Capitol Jazz Cruise. It was 2009. And he's such a sweetheart. You know, he's so open. There's certain artists that you perform with where they just want you to just, you know, do it to the letter. Don't stretch mm-hmm. out. Don't color outside of the line, so to speak. Rick mm-hmm. is always encouraging me to bring myself and my expression full front. You know, he never discourages me from doing that. Actually, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to be touring with him this year in support of his latest project. And it was like he said he didn't think of anybody else that he wanted to be able to do this other than myself, which
That's awesome.
Really take that very seriously. So he's doing a tribute to Chuck Mangione.
Yeah.
So it's going to be some new music, and it's going to be a great show.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I look forward to seeing that one then. I really look forward to seeing that one.
Yeah.
So you were talking about just a moment ago how you kind of felt like you've got more to do in your career. Have you set specific goals for yourself? And if so, what are some of those goals? And what are some of those things that you're wanting to accomplish going forward?
Just to go back to the beginning of the interview, I definitely want to get more recorded music out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's always been some big gaps in between my records, and I'd like to be more proficient as a recording artist and get music out to the masses more. That cycle of getting music out and producing things and getting it to the fan base, that cycle seems to get shorter and shorter, especially mm-hmm. with streaming and how people consume music these days. So that's definitely something I want to do and do it in different ways. So
okay.
goals that I have, I definitely want to do an all vocal record.
And oh, cool.
I definitely want to do an album that is, you know, completely focused on traditional jazz and that style of music. You know, mm-hmm. where that is going to be like the focus of that entire project. So those kinds of things. Get out and tour some more, obviously, would be great. And really mentoring, too. And,
oh, great.
Kind of looking more seriously. And I have some informal mentoring relationships that I have now with a few musicians that I know here in Chicago. But something a little more formal, something a little more arranged and in a place or an opportunity where children or up and coming artists or anyone that feels like I have something that I can help them with. Come on, let's do it. Let's do it.
Man, okay. You know, you just said something. See, now I'm gonna tap into you because we do a lot of with the Fresh Coast Jazz Festival. We do a lot of work with young people and mentoring up here in Milwaukee. So we get you in that car and get you up the road for a minute, man.
Say the word. I'm all in.
All right. All right. It's gonna be coming your way, then. It's gonna be coming your way.
That's great.
Yeah. So, okay, we referenced a little bit earlier too, you know, the changes in the music industry, right? Mm-hmm. Like I don't know that people really like I think that I teach marketing at one of the universities here, and one of the things I talk about is how Apple really kind of single-handedly changed the music industry when talk about people that tell people that I'm old enough to remember when there used to be these things called record stores, right? All over the place. And now you go to a city, you lucky you find one or two, you know, if you find any, right?
Right.
For you, how do you keep up with the constant changes in the business that you talked about before? And what is it like, you know, like what does it require for you to know what's going on and to see what's coming down the pipe?
I think it's something that in real time, it is hard to grasp. This is funny because right before we got on, you know, I got an email from my booking agent, who's also my best friend. And we're kind of in this big conversation now about AI and how it's being used in the music business. And, you know, the fact is AI, there's nothing new about it. I definitely have some strong opinions about it, which probably aren't fully formed and really are based on an emotional reaction to what I feel like it's going to do to musicians. So I feel like the thing that we all need to do and that I struggle with doing sometimes and that, you know, I really will probably dive into after this interview once I read this email is be open-minded. You know, and I think that's really kind of what it takes. And you also have to not fall in love with the version of the music industry that either you've been successful with, that you're currently navigating, or the reason why you fell in love with music and wanted to do it in the first place. Because none of that stuff exists anymore. And it changes so quickly that you just got to be flexible. And, you know, there's parts of, you know, because AI has been here, like I said, forever in different ways. They just didn't call it artificial intelligence. But if you talk about samplers or Pro Tools, you know, recording methods and the way that everything is all digital, you know, and it used to be all analog. That's all a form of artificial intelligence. So, you know, we look at some of that stuff for good and then we look at it at some of the stuff for bad, you know, or we look at it like this thing is bad and this is good when it's all probably just a tool and you just got to learn how to use it and bring your humanity into the situation and bring your humanness into the aspect of it. Now that's the artistic part of it. When we start talking about, you know, the dollars and cents part of the business, I think that's just something that we just, as artists, we can't afford not to look at that anymore. We can't afford not to be tapped into how streaming works and how it doesn't work. I think a lot of times, because I've had some recent conversations with some artists that have really used Spotify and the streaming services to their benefit. And I think we, as artists, because we're so bottom line focused, we think about what money we're missing and not think about how this tool can actually help me and the money will come on the back end. So I'm starting to try to do that. And, you know, I'm a human being, so I'm not always successful with staying on top of it. And definitely get in my feelings about it. But, you know, it's, you just got to have an open mind and be flexible, really.
Yeah.
Because this stuff changes like that.
Yeah, it really does. It's been so many changes. And, you know, I think the jury is out on, you know, on some of it, but I know it makes it that much more challenging to be a musician in this day and age, right? So, yeah. When you did your first release, what was the feeling like, Marquell, when you heard that first song from that first release on radio?
Oh man, it was surreal. I went through a bunch of different emotional phases with that record. I do remember, I think the biggest one that I had was when the CDs were delivered to me and they came to
Oh,
my
yeah.
apartment, and you open that box and you see all of those things. You see the image and you see all of that. I was like, man, I cried for about 10 minutes, man.
That's all
Seriously.
right. That's all right.
And then it became like, okay, I gotta catch the song on the radio. I gotta catch the song on the radio. So when I finally heard it, it was just like, man, this is unbelievable. And I have been involved with original bands before here in Chicago, local bands, over the years. So I'd heard my music on the radio before, but it was me as part of a band. But the difference with it saying Markwell Jordan, or the DJ saying this is Markwell Jordan and his debut single 2 a.m. like that hit different. It was just it was like, man, I really manifested this and I made this happen. Because getting that first record done was not easy. I actually got fired by Brian Culberson in the process, and then he rehired me before the record came out. And it was that first one will always. It'll always hold a fond space in my heart because of what it took to make it happen.
Yeah, that's good, man. That is fantastic. All right, so Markwell, we love to play the do this little segment. We call it Bout It or Doubt It. So
Okay.
if you are about it, it's something that you like or that you're down with. If you doubt it, it's obviously something that you're not into. Can
Okay.
we twist your arm and get you to play a little Bout It or Doubt It with us today?
I'm about it. Let's
All right,
go.
all right. So we're gonna spin our wheel and get you a category.
All right.
All right, man. And your category today, and this is coming from here we go with this cross-border rivalry thing. Your
Uh-oh.
category today is sports.
Oh, yeah, let's
So
get it.
bout it or doubt it, hockey.
Doubt it. And it's really only because I just haven't had an experience to check it out. I talked to my wife about this recently, and we've talked about potentially going to a Blackhawks game. Because everybody says hockey is one of those sports, if you don't go see it, you're never going to know the appeal of it. So I'll be open to checking it out. But as presently stated, I've never been to a game. I've never really sat down and watched a game. I was kind of into the Los Angeles Kings for a little bit, because I'm loyal to the LA sports teams. That's my hometown. So those are the teams that I still root for. So at this point, doubt it, but my mind is changing about it. Let's say
Yeah, there you go. That's good. That's good. My wife is a Chicagoan. She, like you, a Chicago transplant, but spent most of her adult life in Chicago. And she is a Blackhawks fan, right?
Okay.
Markwell, a friend of mine, his son was playing in a high school hockey game. I took my wife to that high school hockey game, and I was absolutely petrified because my wife, she had no kid playing in the game. She was the loudest person in the whole area, man. And I
Love
was like,
it.
I don't know that I could take you to hockey games anymore. Like, she just got way, way, way too into it. And it is kind of fun. It was fun. Don't get me
Right,
wrong. But I was just
right.
like, wow, that was a whole nother side. So be careful when you take your wife. You might see something, you might bring something out in her
Absolutely.
that you may not know is existing, you know? All
Absolutely.
right, let's do one more. Bout it or doubt it, baseball.
Wow. You know what? I'm going to say about it. Baseball has been good to me the last couple of years because the Dodgers have won the World Series the last 2 years. And I remember growing up in Los Angeles, my great grandmother was a huge Dodgers fan. So whenever we would spend time with her, we would ride around in her Dodge Dart, I think she had. And she always had the baseball game on the radio. So we would listen to Vin Scully, man, and it just like so those have some like baseball, I have some really cool childhood memories with. It's been a while since I've been to a game. Actually, me and my wife went to a White Sox game on her birthday about a year and a half ago. And it was fun. The White Sox are horrible. But we have fun at the game, man. It was a good time. So I'm about baseball. I'm say I'm about it,
There we go. There we go. I'm a baseball person too. I was much more of a baseball person when I was growing up, but one of the coolest experiences, I've been fortunate enough to go to a few ballparks. But I have to say, my coolest baseball experience was Chavez Ravine, seeing a Dodger game.
Wow.
I
Yeah, I've
mean,
never been.
okay, oh man, it's a different vibe because, like, it's to me, Chavez Ravine, like, it's huge from a parking area and everything like that. But once you get inside of the stadium, it's really kind of like being in like a huge high school baseball stadium, right?
Wow.
You know, like in other stadiums, you got all these signs everywhere, and it's all about the promotion and all that kind of stuff. In Chavez Ravine, man, it's about watching a game, man. So it's really cool. It's really cool.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm definitely gonna have to do that soon.
Have you a Dodger dog, and you know, and
Oh,
just
yeah.
chill. Keep
Yep.
it, yeah, just keep it 100. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy the beautiful weather too. But that was my favorite baseball experience. So,
Okay, right on.
yeah. So when you're working, do you prefer working in the studio? Do you prefer performing live? Are they do they feed two different sides of who you are?
That is a great question. I'll tell you, Carl. I'm more comfortable on stage, hands down.
Yeah. Okay.
And trying to get comfortable in a studio is a never-ending pursuit because, the thing about when you put those headphones on and you can hear everything, it tends to make me tense up. And there's a lot of artists that when they go in the studio, they feel completely free. Like that, they feel the limitless creativity of it. They know, like they're really comfortable being in that environment. For me, it's one of those things where it takes me some time to get comfortable in the studio to let my true self come out, and I'm getting closer, but I definitely haven't been there yet. So, I think that's one of those challenges and things that I will definitely obviously have to get over. But it is definitely two different skill sets because they're great live performers who aren't great in studio, and they're great studio performers who aren't live. But then there's someone like Stevie Wonder or Prince or Miles Davis or who can do it, who was able to do it anywhere, stage, live, one person in the audience or a million. Like they still are going to get their thing across.
So how much does crowd energy impact what you do when you're on stage?
Another great question. I wish I could lie and say it doesn't matter. It matters. It definitely matters. And it matters also depending on the venue or how big of the show is. Like if you're in an intimate space, you can get into the music and not necessarily worry about the crowd. If you're in a bigger space, the bigger the crowd, the more you will feed off the energy that you get. But yeah, it's crucial. You definitely want to make sure, and one of my missions is always just like from the first note, set the vibe, present the vibe to the audience, let them know that you're taking them on a journey, and see how many of these people want to come with you. And if it's, let's say it's a crowd of 1,000, all you really need is about 200 of those people to really be for you. And that 200 is either gonna fuel the performance, or it's going to fuel the other 800 in the room.
Yeah,
So
that's a great point.
at some point we all are going to get into it. Just a matter of some people enjoy it more than others,
No, that's a great point. That's a great point. So I know you're coming off of being on the Smooth Jazz Cruise recently, and you've been on the road quite a bit. So, how often these days do you find yourself out on the road, and what are some of the things you do to make touring a bit more palatable for yourself?
I think now, especially since I've gotten a little bit older and been married for a few years, I just feel like I need some quiet time. And a lot of times, the moments on the road when I'm just able to just either be in a hotel room or do nothing, or maybe walk around the city if I have a little bit of time where I am, or grab something to eat, like those times are just kind of like almost meditative for me at the moment. Just to kind of get into a nice headspace and a nice space spiritually where it's, by the time that it's time to perform, I'm ready and I can roll and I can do what I need to do. So it's that's generally what I try to do, and make it feel better for me. like traveling and touring gets harder and harder. And I think that's one of the things that when I talk to someone like Rick Braun, or when I talk to Brian or anyone that has done this for a long period of time, the traveling is the worst part. The getting to the airport and flying and figuring this out and getting from here to there and all of that stuff. It's always a grind. It's always a challenge. It never becomes easy. But it's a necessary evil. So you just got to have a moment to have some time to yourself, or at least I do, so that I can feel comfortable and get ready to be on stage and do my thing.
How much do you have to build in contingency plans? Like, I remember one year at our festival, it seemed like every flight for every artist that was coming in was something happened and those flights were delayed or whatever. How much do you have to say, man, I got to have a plan A or a plan B? Or do you do that?
That's a great question. In general, I would like to be into or fly into the city I'm performing at a day before. It's not always feasible, but if whenever it is feasible, or if I have control in the matter, I try to get there a day before. That way, if there are any issues, if there's a flight that is delayed, at least it's not on the day of the show and I'm traveling and trying to figure all of that stuff out. I think that's the only contingency plan that I have. Last year I had to do a gig or a show with Rick Braun, and I think it was in San Ramon, California. And all of the flights were starting to be canceled. There was a lot of storms leaving out of Chicago. And so it was like I had to land in Burbank for some reason. And I didn't know if I was going to be able to catch a flight from Burbank to get to Oakland so I could be close to where San Ramon is. And so I got like, I'm on the flight. I'm on the internet. I'm trying to get a hotel room somewhere in Burbank so that I'm not stranded, you know. And when it was all said and done, I got the room, prepaid for it, but then I was able to get on a flight and I couldn't get that money back. It was just like, oh, well. But, you know, it's just stuff always comes up, and traveling is definitely getting more dicey these days.
It sure is.
And, you know, you just got to, I think the best contingency plan I have is just to try to get there a day before.
Yeah, that's wise. That's wise. Yeah. Well, let's take a listen to another one of your songs, man. This one, when you said earlier, you know, you described yourself as Grover and Maxwell. This song, I think, really, really showcases that. Why don't we play Dot Dot Dot?
Yeah, man, that's the one. Let's go get it.
I want for you to be well, and I know you are, 'cause I can tell by the way you're loving me. Dot 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 dot, got that love. Always thinking of you. Whoa. I got the love for you. Always thinking of you, baby. Listen, your wish is my obsession. I'm pleasing you and always. Have you thinking about this love for days? My touch, your parade. Let's make this a moment to remember. The two of us become one. After the night, do we say the song? I've got this love for you. Girl, I'm always thinking of you.
got time for one more. Thank you guys for coming to listen. It is so much music you could be getting into. So thank you for hanging with me tonight. Put your hands together for Candy Dover and Ivan Perotti over there. Sitting.
All right. All right, that was our friend and today's guest, Marquell Jordan, with his hit dot dot dot. So do you remember, Marquell, the first concert you ever went to?
I would probably say I probably was maybe 7 or 8 years old. My uncle is a soprano saxophonist and a flautist.
Okay.
He played with the big band in Los Angeles by the name of the Horace Tapscott. Horace Tapscott Big Band.
Okay.
Horace Tapscott was a huge avant-garde big band leader, performer, pianist, really prominent in the Los Angeles area. He actually used to be married to the actress Marla Gibbs at one point.
Oh, sure. Life. Okay.
So they used to do like these monthly concerts at a church in Watts. Uh-huh. So I think that was one of my first concert experiences.
The one
that I'll say that really sticks with me more than anything else, that was just like, yo, this is amazing, I gotta do this. I went to the Playboy Jazz Festival at the Hollywood Bowl in 1981. Actually, uh-huh. 1981 and 1982.
Okay.
And both of those shows were just kind of like life altering because I got to see a lot of people that was in my father's record collection, you know, like Freddie Hubbard or Ron Carter, McCoy Tyner. You know, and then I saw Grover Washington in 1982. And I mean, he was on stage with like some serious jazz legends and he tore everybody apart.
Oh, I bet.
He killed everybody, man. You know, and he was coming off of, you know, that was when the Wine Light album was still pretty popular. And so he had all of those hits and it was just, it was amazing to see him get down like that, man. I was like, yeah, I got to do that. So those two shows, I would say, Playboy Jazz Festival 81 and 82.
How cool is that, man? How cool is that? I think my very first concert was Parliament Funkadelic and Rick James on the same bill.
What? Oh, that's crazy.
Yes, yes. Parliament Funkadelic. And it was the Mothership Connection tour, right? Mm. And it was at the arena in Milwaukee, and the way they had the Mothership Connection, you know, up in the top of the ceiling, right? Mm-hmm. And they had this, all this smoke, and George descended from what looked like the spaceship, man. Yeah, and I tell you what, those pictures are still etched in my brain decades later, man. And it was something else. I'll never forget that show.
Yeah, man. I have a good friend of mine, a guitarist that was with me in Coverson's band for a while. His name is Wayne Bruce. He's based out of D.C. area. And he talked about his experience going to see the Mothership Connection in Maryland, which,
okay,
you know, if you know about the Parliament music family, a lot of those musicians that played with George in like the mid to late 70s, a lot of them are from Baltimore.
Okay, so, okay.
You know, he talks about that experience. He said he went with his older brother and he said it was just mind blowing. I wish I had that experience.
Yeah, it was mind blowing. Yeah. Oh man, yes indeed. So on each episode, one of the things we like to do is recognize some of the artists that laid the foundation for contemporary jazz and some of the artists that we think are gonna play a significant role in moving the genre forward. Today we feature a rising star guitarist and vocalist, Andrea Lisa.
Oh,
Andrea, she did her first U.S. festival gig at our Fresh Coast Jazz Festival a couple of years ago. And now she's one of the most in-demand artists out there. We aren't surprised because not only does she sing like an angel, but she plays that guitar like nobody's business. So
absolutely.
Yeah, her sound is so fresh, and we're sure that she's going to be around for a while. So we're going to play one of her songs here. We're going to play one from her breakthrough album, Silver Lining. And this is my favorite song on the album, but I got to tell you, that whole album is dope. Mm-hmm. This song is called Calvert Street.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, that was Andrea Lisa, one to watch with her song Calvert Street. So, Marquell,
Yeah.
I love to ask all of our guests a couple of questions, and one of them is, can I put you on the spot and ask you to give us your three favorite albums?
Oh, wow. Oh, man. Okay. This list is long, but I'm gonna just give you three that are just off the top of my head.
Okay, cool.
Branford Marsalis Quartet, Eternal.
Okay.
That came out in 2004. It's probably my favorite Branford album. It's an album full of ballads. It's incredible. It's
Okay.
beautiful. And Branford is like my hero.
Yeah.
I started playing because of Train. So he's
Okay.
obviously Big Papa.
Yeah.
But like my hero and the guy that I really wanted to be like was Branford. So that's
Okay.
one. Number two, I'll say Herbie Hancock Thrust. And really only because it has Actual Proof and Butterfly on it. Those two songs
Yeah.
alone are just like, and it's just a four song album, but the vibe that they create on that record is just amazing. And Butterfly is like, I've told people, that's the song that I want played at my funeral. Like,
Okay. Oh, wow.
and
Wow.
I don't want anybody to play it. I want the original version played. So that's number two. And then number three, Michelle and Dighiaccio, Peace Beyond Passion.
Oh,
Love
man.
that record. Love that record.
Yeah.
And it came out at a time when I was really starting to sing seriously for the first time. And start to kind of get that stuff together. And the original band that I was in, the name of the band was Fat Time. So it was
Okay.
myself and a good college friend, classmate, good friend slash musician and band partner.
Okay.
That was one of those records that we listened to all the time, and we were really trying to aspire to do music at that caliber.
Sure,
Obviously, we
sure,
didn't get
sure.
close, but that record, immediately whenever I put it on, and it's 30 years old now, but when I put that record on, at any time, it takes me right back to that moment, and it takes me back to that feeling. And there's something that is very, very like contemporary and cutting edge about it, but then there's also something that is very connected to the tradition of soul music and jazz and everything. It's one of my favorites of all time. So those three.
All right, yeah, those are three goodies. Those are three
Yeah.
real, real goodies. And I'm gonna let you in a little secret here. One of the reasons I asked that question is because it always allows me to discover some stuff that I ain't thought about in a while. So say you gave me something I'm gonna get to listen to this weekend again now. So
There you
rediscovering,
go.
you know?
Right.
So all right, another good question for you. You're having a dinner party. You can invite any three people you want to invite, living or deceased. Who's coming to your dinner party and what's on the menu?
Oh, wow. I'd say Malcolm X. John Coltrane.
Okay.
And it has to be a woman. It has to be a woman. Harriet Tubman.
Ooh, wow, that's a great that wow.
Yeah,
That
Harriet
would
Tubman.
be a party. That would be
Yeah.
an interest. Man, I would love to be a fly on the wall on that one.
I don't know how many laughs we'd have, but
Yeah. But
pretty soon.
you would get to some deep stuff, boy.
Yeah. And w
Yeah.
what would be on the menu for that group of people? Well, it would have to be something that didn't have pork, I
Yeah.
would say.
Yeah.
So I'd say Ethiopian food. Let's go with
Okay.
that.
Okay.
E
Okay.
Ethiopian food. So,
Okay.
yeah.
Cool. Now that would be a great party. That would be a
Yeah.
great party.
Yeah.
So tell us about what the rest of this year has in store for you. I know you said you're going to be touring with Rick Braun, in support of his new record, and you're starting to work on yours. So what else do you got going on for 2026?
Actually still building the touring schedule. So I obviously will be at Fresh Coast Fest.
Yes.
Looking forward to that. Really excited about that.
As are we.
And doing some spot dates around the country.
Okay.
Just signed on doing a show at Thornton Winery in Temecula, California,
Oh, cool.
opening for Jeffrey Osborne, which is
Oh.
crazy, man. I'm excited about that one. That's Labor Day weekend.
Okay.
And just continuing, like I said, to work on the music and get something out to people really, really soon. Definitely a single and hopefully a full-length album by, I would say, the end of summer.
Okay.
So that's what we're looking at, just continuing to keep the train moving and keep the momentum going and, you know, and touching down with fans and doing some other things. You know, I'm also doing the Jazz on the Vine Festival again this year.
Yes.
And a couple of other things. So schedule is still being built. It's incomplete, but there's a lot of dates on it still. And looking forward to this run with Rick. It's going to be a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Well, I'm going to see you at Jazz on the Vine because my wife and I will be there. So
we'll be in the
crowd. So so we're looking forward to that, and we're definitely looking forward to having you at Fresh Coast Jazz Festival in August, man. So we really appreciate you taking time today, brother, to chop it up with us and let us get a peek inside of what's going on with you, man. And we're happy for the success you are having, and we wish you just much, much more continued success going forward.
Thank you so much, Carl, and really appreciate you and your wife, the great work you do at Fresh Coast Jazz Festival, and just having an outlet for us to express ourselves, you know, whether it's through this medium or the festival and all of the things you do during the year. So thank you, man. It's a blast. Looking forward to it.
It is our pleasure, man. It is our pleasure. And everybody, be sure to go to freshcoastjazz.com now to get your tickets for the 2026 Fresh Coast Jazz Festival, August 20th through 22nd at the beautiful Pabst Theater in downtown Milwaukee. Not only will you get to experience Marquell Jordan and his band live, but you'll also enjoy performances by Spiral Gyra, Jonathan Butler, Candace Springs, Jared Lawson, and Eric Essex. Plus, you can experience The Pairing, our unique wine tasting event featuring the music of George Benson or the Fresh Coast Cruise. Don't wait, get your tickets now.